In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Sundress. Today, we continue our conversation with Mark Miller. Mark talks about how he's been spending his weekends making a guerrilla film called Miracle Park. Now, some of the details came out on IGN, and Mark gives us a few more. Plus, he gives us his view of where the superhero film genre is today. We also talk about some of his Miller World icon books like Nemesis and Superior debuting next month, and the contrast of what he's doing in his own versions of superpowered archetypes versus what he does for the Marvel Universe. You'll hear more about Mark's men's magazine, Clint, and how important it is to wrap each issue of comics with pop culture features. We'll also talk a lot about his era of comic creators who use the internet to interact with a community of patrons that support all of his projects. Word Balloon is brought to you by Fanboy Scouts. Have you ever wondered what it's like to live in another world, another universe, another time? If you're a card-carrying member of the Geek Class, you've probably spent countless hours inside fantastic worlds of pure imagination. Books, comics, movies, TV. Whether it's a magical realm of wizards and witches, fighting with the rebellion against an evil empire, or soaring through the skies in brightly colored spandex and a cape, we've all wondered what it would be like to be part of these amazing stories. Now you can bring a part of that magic with you wherever you go. FanboyScouts.com is the home to the original Geek Merit Badge, embroidered patches that represent your ability to meet goals, achieve skills, and complete amazing adventures from all the magical realms we spent all our lives dreaming about. Have you ever made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs? Have you scaled Mount Doom? If so, then you should own the limited edition Merit Badge that will show you the world your achievements. Visit FanboyScouts.com today and join the coolest troop in the multiverse. Obviously, I want to start with the movie. So, Miracle Park.
Yep.
Tell me about it. I know it's been keeping you busy on the weekends, and this is very exciting to go to guerrilla filmmaking as opposed to traditional filmmaking that you were doing on Kick-Ass and Wanda.
Well, I mean, in terms of kind of story, everything that hasn't been released on IGN, I'm keeping it so under wraps. It's like I'm taking the J.J. Abrams approach to this. So, like, I'll tell you everything except what it's about, because that's not even going to be released until even January. The Empire are going to be running the trailer, the teaser trailer for it in January. But even then, we're not quite saying what it's about either, you know? So we're keeping that way, way, way under wraps just now. But what I can tell you, though, is principal photography finishes at the end of October, and we should have a first edit of the film by Christmas, and the whole thing completely done, I think, by about the middle of January, all the post-production work. So yeah, it's great. It's really fast. And, this is a very, very low-budget movie, but is very wide in scope and ambition. Even though it's a cheap movie, it does things that you would expect from a kind of summer blockbuster, you know. So I think you can just do it with a bit of kind of creative filmmaking, you know. So in terms of ambition, it's gigantic. In terms of budget, it's tiny. But what a perfect way to start. I mean, the last thing I want is someone giving me $30 million and letting me mess it up.
Sure. No, and I think technology is making it easier to make what looks like a big budget movie. I mean, I thought Ed Brubaker had that Angel of Death movie last summer or two summers ago, and I thought, you know, it was only made for $1 million, and it looked like, you know, a typical studio $40 million picture in terms of the shots and you know, the way everything turned out. So you can make a movie on a shoestring budget and still make it look great.
I never saw it. Did this come out in cinemas last year? I never heard of it.
Yeah, I was. You know, it went direct to video, and it had some cable play, but it was a Sony project that was, you know, a low budget project, and he wrote the script for it. And
right, that's weird. Normally, you hear that stuff all over the board. I never heard anything about it.
Angel of Death. Yep. That's
the,
look for it. But let's talk about the experience then of making the movie, if you can't talk about plot.
I'll tell you about the lunch we had, you know, and things like that. I'll tell you about the
experience.
Oh, it's been great. You know, it's just been a laugh, actually. You know, I've really, really enjoyed it. Like, I mean, you have to remember that since I was 19, I've really been sitting on my own at the computer, sitting writing, you know. So actually getting out of the house is actually very exciting, you know, like getting to go down on set and just sort of mixing around with all the actors and so on. It's just fun, you know.
Sure.
And what's nice is that I can come back and go on with my regular job, you know, writing comics, and this is just a fun little diversion, you know. So, you know, it's kind of the best of both worlds. But I wouldn't like to do one full-time. Again, I think it's just nice kind of mixing up a little, you know. Like, I've found over the last year or two that I actually enjoy getting out and doing other things too, you know. So my main job is comics, but I like the fact that one day a week or three evenings a week or something, you know, I'll be off at editorial meetings for Quint, or, you know, on set for a movie, or sitting with a cinematographer working out locations, you know, that we're going to be using in a film. And it's just nice mixing up a little bit. I think after a long time sitting at my computer, I'm enjoying the fresh air.
Well, from a film standpoint, you know, how do you feel you've discovered this directing style? I mean, you know, are you going as you go along, or was it things you learned from working with Matthew? You tell me.
Well, I mean, I've been around movie sets for a little while now, but again, I see this as kind of an experiment, you know, and hopefully it'll go well. Fingers crossed. But to me, it's looking really, really good, and everybody seems really kind of excited by it, what they're seeing. But you know, to me, it's just you know, I've been watching guys doing it. I'm figuring out how to do it myself, and it's actually very, very similar to comics, and certainly the way I do comics. I know a lot of people try and make comics as difficult as possible for, you know, mainstream readers to pick up, but I've always been a fan of making comics very, very accessible and, you know, using a fairly storyboard kind of format. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done that really since 1999, and just followed a very, very simple format for telling the story. And it's not a million miles away from that, you know. It's just that there's a camera there instead of an artist, you know, instead of a colourist, we have a cinematographer and so on. It just, it feels very natural, actually. I think we're probably going to see a lot more comic guys drifting off into doing this, especially now it's so cheap.
Well, exactly, and that was what I was saying about the technology, too, that you guys can kind of do your own projects rather than have to go to a publisher, or in this case, obviously, a studio, and really, you know, do your own thing. So, no, I think that's exciting. But as opposed to comics, where you're just really dealing with an artist, and it might be easier to redraw a page, how is it manipulating actors the same way that you're asking an artist to, you know, draw that static image on a panel?
Oh man, it's so much easier. It really is. It's like, I mean, you have to remember that most of my, you know, career has spent tearing my hair out because my artist is 3 months behind, you know? It's like, you know, I don't find artists easy. I mean, I love them dearly, but most of the guys I work with are actually good friends of mine, but like, all the frustrations that I have, I suppose I don't have, because the actors are there on time and they do what I say, which is great. So, I find that easy. And if I don't like a take, I can just say, like, do it again. Whereas with an artist, first take is what you get, because they're going to be spending 2 or 3 days on that page, you know. I mean, I did a take last week in an underground tunnel network, and they were just there all day, just, you know, shooting a few minutes, you know, but like, it was great. Until we got it right, we just kept doing it.
And I should mention, by the way, that I spoke to Tony Harris, and he assured me that War Heroes will continue. So mentioning that about artists and stuff. So
he's been drawing issue 4, actually. I mean, I spoke to Tony about a month ago, I think, and he was on issue 4, which is great. I mean, I just love Tony, you know. I mean, I'm just happy to be working with him. If it takes a while, it takes a while, you know. I hope the readers can be patient while he draws it, because, I mean, I think he's, you know, one of the top 10 guys alive at the moment, you know. Like, there's just some great guys, you know. There's like Brian Hitch, there's Steve McNiven, there's Lionel Francis Yu, Frank Quitely, Adam Hughes, Travis Shirey. You know, these are the kind of the modern masters, really. John Romita Jr. And Tony's just one of those guys. You know, I think there's 10 great artists at the moment. And I'm lucky to be working with about 6 of them.
Absolutely, that's very true. And I've loved what Lionel has done with you on Ultimate Avengers so far, and look forward to seeing what you guys have cooking coming up in Superior as well.
Do you know, I think they were pleased with Superior. You know, like, I got the first just under 3 issues. I think Lionel's about 6 pages away from finishing issue 3. You know, I've written up to about issue 5.5 or something at the moment, and it's just spectacular. I mean, the moderators on my board on Millerworld, you get a sneak peek at everything, you know. And, I mean, there's about 16 of the guys, and they're all like, we can't believe Lionel is this good. I mean, this is just like the best work of his career. It's absolutely amazing. And, you know, Jerry Inkman as well, just looks absolutely spectacular. So, no, I couldn't be happier. And he's the perfect guy to draw this book. I mean, the action sequences and issues, 2 and 3, are just beyond belief. Some of the big rescues. So, I mean, I haven't really written, you know, much in the way of those big Superman, Captain Marvel, kind of, you know, big massively superpowered characters that much. So for me to kind of bring that widescreen approach to that, I'm hopefully giving people stuff they've never really seen before, because you don't really get that kind of scale in most traditional comics, you know. So it's very, very exciting.
Well, a lot of people love what you did do with Superman back when you were at DC. Even, you know, the Superman Adventures. I mean, for people who don't know and never picked up those books that you did, the kids' books, my God, they really are fun Superman stories. And I would think with Superior, it's an opportunity to tell those stories without the confinements of, you know, everything people know about Superman. And you're able to contradict what might be natural, you know, for what the story that you want to tell, as opposed to what we would expect from a Captain Marvel or a Superman.
I suppose, you know, it's an analogue of one of those characters in the same way that Supreme or any of those things are, but
sure.
It does very much its own thing as well, you know, but it's definitely not massively kid-friendly. You know,
I understand.
I think when they do the film of it, I think they'll probably make it a lot more kid-friendly, which is fine, but in the dialogue, I think just my memory of a 12-year-old talking was lots of swearing, you know? And, so the kids talking, they're swearing, you know, they're chatting about things that would probably be inappropriate, you know? But I think as a film, it'd be a very good idea to do that in a very Spielberg circa 1981 thing, you know? You know, they should be talking like Elliot and his friends, or Elliot's older brother and so on, you know, from E.T. So, I wanted to do something a little different, though. I mean, even though this is probably as family-friendly as I get now, it's still, you know, pretty inappropriate, you know?
That's right.
I wouldn't recommend it to anyone under 14 as a comic, you know?
No, but that's good, man. I mean, no.
Well, and saying that, it's still weirdly charming as well. I mean, like, Nemesis is just all out a kind of pretty evil comic book, you know? Kick-Ass is very charming and all that, but it's also got an incredible amount of violence.
Absolutely.
You know, but this one is probably as close to charming as I get.
Well, and I wonder, as you move forward with, you know, the work that you do for Marvel's licensed characters, and then your own creator books as well, you know, this, it's good because you are getting the best of both worlds, but also I was thinking about, like, Superior in particular, and that it is, you know, an archetype, but it's kind of like Westerns where, you know, there's always the sheriff, and I think that the superhero genre has maybe reached a level of acceptance where you can have an archetype like a Superman-like character or a Batman-like character, be he hero or villain.
Yeah.
And still then be able to start with that as the template, but then still tell your own story. I mean, High Noon, the Western with Gary Cooper, is very different than, you know, John Wayne, True Grit, or something like that.
It's true. It's a good point. You know, I mean, I think we're actually at the stage now where people are looking for something new, and I think the Hollywood producers certainly are. But you know, they're looking for the next thing because they're moving on to Spider-Man 4 and Iron Man 3, and you know, trying to reboot Superman yet again and everything. You know, I just think not that these characters have had their day, but you know, it feels kind of, at the moment, it feels kind of like if the Marvel Universe hadn't happened and we still had those Golden Age characters just in the 60s, there was no sort of Stan Lee, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, that kind of thing. You know, I feel as if for the last 10 years or so, you know, even guys like myself, I mean, I'm talking about creators in general, we tend to play with the old toys, you know, the stuff that we loved as kids. And I can understand it because I got into comics to write the stuff I loved as a kid. I didn't get into it to write Kick-Ass. You know, I got into it to do the stuff I loved as a kid. But I've had an awakening as such, you know, like, but I think, well, you know what, if nobody creates anything new, you know, for this generation, something that's spawned from this generation, then it's going to be kind of weird, you know, if we're just reheating old characters all the time. I mean, how many times can you reboot something? And I feel like that, you know, with the Big Two's books as well, you know, like, there's books I enjoy, but also at the same time, I just sort of think, well, how many times can this character, this villain, show up and fight that character and be thwarted, you know? How many times can he not get the girl? You know, how many times can he be late for work and, you know, his boss is angry with him?
Sure.
I feel I want to see some new stuff. And I think just as a reader, the stuff I'm more drawn towards now, I suppose, is the more indie stuff, like, you know, I'm reading more horror stuff, I think, probably, and I like some of the indie superhero books out there, too.
Well, and I hear that the new movie obviously will have some elements of horror in it. From what we've read on IGN, it sounds like there's a little bit of government conspiracy, which seems to be kind of a favorite, you know, trope that you like to go back to. And something about your generation of writers, and I want your opinion of this because it sounds like you're speaking towards this as well. It seems like the generation right before you with Image. Coming out when it did in the 90s, was afforded the opportunity. There were some recognizable people that had worked for the big two, were able to step away from it, create their own thing. But I think you guys, like yourself, Brian Bendis, Ed Brubaker, Rucka, guys like even Matt, you know, Matt Fraction, guys of that generation can spend your time in the mainstream. Certainly Robert Kirkman is doing it, where you put your time in for the big two and then also take that audience with you to explore these other ideas. And, you know, I remember you even saying that, you know, you were worried how much time you'll be allowed to tell stories for the big two. I remember us having that conversation a few years ago. And now you're kind of feeling your oats and kind of moving into that next level of creativity, of doing your own thing.
Yeah, thanks. I also think, I mean, I've quite purposely actually restrained myself. You know, I've rationed the amount of work that I have done for Marvel. Just because I like the idea of dipping in and doing something special. Like, I think it'd be very, very easy to burn out if I was just in there month in, month out, writing Marvel characters, you know? And I think I think Brian Bendis is probably the only exception to this, you know, but the stuff still looks really, really good. And the stuff still Marvel's top sellers. Bendis is great. But I think he's more the exception, really, you know? Generally, you know, you have a finite time at the company and then you're sort of shuffled along and another wave of guys are brought in and so on because you've really run out of, you know, Yellow Jacket stories to tell or something like that, you know? So what I've done really is, I suppose, keep my love of the Marvel stuff and never really felt as if I'm clocking in and clocking out by really limiting the amount of stuff I do. So I'd say the vast majority of the stuff I do now is creator-owned. But when I do dip in and do some Marvel stuff, I'm really enjoying it. You know, like, I'll be finished Ultimate Avengers very soon, but the next project I do for Marvel, I'm not even entirely sure what that is yet, it'll be because I really, really want to do it, not because that's how I pay my bills.
No, and I think that's great. And also, you know, I just look at the generations before you, too, that after those guys were out of the spotlight, they had spent so much time working for the big two that, you know, nobody could even consider them doing things on their own. And it really is this exclusive Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore club that now you can find yourself in as well. And you know, Grant, I'm sure, is in there to a degree as well. I mean, that's the thing. And I think that's why, like I said, I really think this generation is representing that stage that the guys from the 70s and 80s couldn't achieve, even when they had the direct market and almost the laboratory to do it. It seems now the time is right for creators to be able to step away from the big two and do their own thing, and the public will be there and follow them.
I think the trick is to stay commercial whenever you go creator-owned. Like, the big mistake I think people make is to do something that's art house when they go creator-owned, or this one's to win an award. But I think you should try and bring the same level of, you know, sort of commercial head to something whenever you're doing your own books. You know, like, I don't, when I sit and write Kick-Ass or Nemesis or Superior or whatever, think, oh yeah, this should sell less than my regular Marvel books. I think, you know, I've approached it in such a way in terms of promotion and so on that I would with my Marvel stuff too. I think that's really important. We should never see our own stuff as anything less than Spider-Man or Superman or anything, you know. And I would say the guys in the 70s, and certainly the 70s guys, probably most of the 80s guys too, just didn't have the lucky resources that we have in that sense too.
Sure.
You know, for staffers, they didn't really have the deals that we can get. Like Image doesn't get a lot of credit for the fact that it revolutionized comics by complete control being given to the creators. You know, it never really existed before then. A lot of people claimed to do it, but a lot of creators were getting ripped off on so-called creator-owned projects. But Image were pretty honest, you know, and like, and it was a good deal for creators. And it also made DC create Vertigo, which isn't as good a deal by any means as the Image deal or the Icon deal, and Marvel, of course, with Icon. So Image kind of made the big two honest, which I think is great. And, you know, my generation are very lucky to reap the benefits of that.
And further, too, you guys coming along as the internet grew and the ability to have a community. I mean, Miller World is a very active community. And, you know, I know you're being pulled in a million directions when, you know, Kick-Ass was coming out on DVD. You're working on your film. You're putting Clint out. You're doing your Marvel stuff as well. And yet you're still there for that audience. And, you know, I think of guys like Kevin Smith, who pre-internet was able to really get his audience to kind of be on his side and really be patrons, like much like a painter, having that group of patrons he could always count on to sell his art to. And I think you guys have been able to foster that relationship at a very opportune time, too.
See, I actually just really enjoy it. You know, genuinely, if you're sitting and working, you actually can't phone someone because it pulls you out of work too much and you don't know how long the call's going to last, you know. But whenever you're sitting, you know, halfway through a page or something, sometimes it's quite nice to just log on and go on to Twitter or something for 20 seconds and then go back to work. I think it peps you up while you're sitting working. But I agree. I think the internet is a great democratizer, and I think it's happened in cinema as well. But what you now have is you know, an infinite amount of web space, really, to promote your new creator own books in a way that wouldn't have been possible back when you had to pay for print ads.
Sure.
Like, for example, if I'd brought Kick-Ass out in 1988 or something like that, then I could never have afforded to pay the advertising, you know, Comic Book Heroes or whatever, or, you know, all the places that people used to advertise comics in, you know, back in the pre-internet days.
You bet.
And eventually Wizards, you know, the big trade ads. I mean, that cost a lot of money, you know. So guys like me, you know, who were entirely self-financed, just wouldn't be able to afford it. And if you were lucky, you know, maybe by issue 40 your comic or something, you'd word of mouth up sales. But the internet meant that, you know, Kick-Ass from issue one, by the time you added up all the printings, was out selling pretty much all the Marvel books, everything, you know. And that was based entirely on internet anticipation, you know. But I think it's the same in movies too. I mean, I love the fact that the fan has become as important, if not more important, than the pro. And I say this as a fan myself. And I saw a moment that I might have told you about before when I was at San Diego in the year 2000, the year the X-Men movie came out. I remember sitting having breakfast with a friend, and I looked across and the dining hall in the morning in the hotel, and I saw Harry Knowles standing, and I saw him talking to a big, big director and two other directors waiting in line to talk to him, two big directors waiting in line to talk to Harry Knowles. And I just thought, that just said it all. That was it. And then suddenly the fan was important, as it should be, you know, because you no longer had to kind of wine and dine some snotty critic, you know, from the New York Times or something like that, you know, to get a good buzz on everything. You actually had to, you know, mix with your audience, which is a brilliant thing. And as a creator, I love doing that because I love to kind of hear what people are thinking. And generally, I'm quite like my audience. You know, I'm kind of similar. So, you know, I enjoy hanging out whether it's online or in person with people that are into my books or into comics in general. You know, we're all pretty similar types of people. I
agree, and I see the difference as well. And also, with the entertainment choices that are out there, it's more important for the creators of the content to get aggressive and make sure the audience is there. And yes, definitely cater to them, not to the point of compromising their creativity, but again, to promote it and let them know that they're there for them and that to make them aware of the product, as again, the choices keep getting bigger and it's tough to kind of corral enough people to make a profit of what you produce.
Exactly. Anyone who doesn't print their projects out there is an idiot, you know? It's like, why would you spend weeks on a piece of work, you know, like on a script or art or whatever, and not tell people about it, not promote it, you know? That's a huge part of the job, especially when you're doing creator own books, because you know what? No one else is going to do it for you, you know? So if you want yourself to find an audience, you're the only person that can actually make it happen, you know? Because Marvel don't really see anything out of the Icon books, you know, like the Image guys don't see anything out of Walking Dead or anything. So guys like me or Robert Kirkman or whatever, you know, you have to go out and sell yourself, which I find fun anyway. You know, I really, really love doing that, you know.
Absolutely.
So it's just a nice little part of the job.
Well, and I know I've seen it myself. I've seen you at conventions, both San Diego and some of the other cities and stuff, and you're right there hanging out at the bars, man, and everyone is happy to see you, and you know you're having fun talking to the guys. How are things going with Clint? How did the signings go for that debut issue?
Oh, great. And really one signing. What we did was we wanted to have Clint reach a brand new audience. I mean, I've never thought about this before, but my idea with print was I didn't want to sell it to people who were already going into comic book stores, because those guys read comics already. What I wanted to do was hit the millions of people who don't read comics.
Right.
When I was a kid, growing up in the 70s and 80s, Marvel UK distributed Marvel comics in every single movie. You could buy a Marvel comic within 10 minutes walk of pretty much any house in the UK, you know? And I just don't think it's quite sad that that drifted off. You know, things like 2000 AD, even now, it's still a good comic, but isn't properly distributed. It maybe sells, I don't know, a sixth or a seventh of what it used to sell, you know, back when I was younger. And I just think people get out of the habit of buying comics. So I really looked into it. I really looked very, very carefully at what was going on. And the most obvious thing is that the talent, the big talent, the Alan Moores and, you know, the John Wagners and Pat Meldon and so on, the Brian Bolands, the Dave Gibbons and Kevin Nails, they all drifted off to America in the 80s. And, you know, the people who came in weren't, I don't think, as good as those guys. You know, so there was a natural dip. But also there was a fashion shifting as well, you know, where people were waiting for the new characters or the next new comics to come along, and it never did, because all the creators from the UK went off to work in the States. You know, so I looked at that, but also I realised that now 70, 75% of magazines are sold in supermarkets now, as opposed to newsstand retailers, you know, like what we call newsagents in this country. And those supermarkets in particular won't touch anything that isn't a television tie-on or has a mainstream name on it, you know. So if I created a wonderful new character that was somehow massive or whatever, you know, if I landed lucky and created something great, it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference to one of these supermarkets offering. They wouldn't care unless it was already a movie or unless there was a celebrity involved in some way. So what I did with Clint was I made sure that A, it looked like a magazine, so it could be stacked with magazines. And Comic Art was brilliant at this size, and it was blown up into the four sides of the papers. I also made sure that it had celebrities that were appropriate to the demographic I wanted reading it, which is 16 to 24-year-old guys.
Sure.
So a lot of famous television personalities from over here. And also, I just made sure that Kick-Ass, which was released on DVD the same week they launched, was massively featured all over the first few issues. And made sure there was 500,000 flyers in the UK edition of the Kick-Ass DVD and Blu-ray. So just everything I could possibly do to make it work, I did, and it seems to have gone down a storm. It seems to have worked out great.
What kind of articles are in there? We talked a little bit in our last talk about, and we teased the fact that you're going to have pretty girls in the book, and certainly we've talked about the comedians that you have working on both articles and comics as well. But yeah, I mean, like, is there? I mean, and again, not to say that you're to call these a knockoff or anything, but to compare it to other magazines, is it kind of half Maxim, half 2000 AD?
It's not really like 2000 AD at all. No, it's more like I don't know. It's kind of its own thing, you know. It's a pop culture hybrid, really, because you know, it's aimed at people who enjoy movies. The comic strips that are in it are very filmic. You know, they're very cinematic and easy to understand. You don't have to read 30 years of continuity to understand the comics.
Sure.
And the articles are just the kind of thing guys like us would enjoy reading about. And you know, so you're never going to get a thing on the history of inking or something like that. You're not going to get a specialist comic book thing, but there's articles on things like, for example, I mean, the most comic booky one we have in issue two is those real life superheroes, the real life kick-asses that are in New York. I mean, there's about 60 of those guys in New York.
Sure.
And there's a journalist dressed up as one of them and goes out on location with them, you know, when they're out doing their patrols at night, you know, that kind of stuff.
Interesting.
But then we might have a funny Q&A with Chris Mintz Platts or whatever, you know. So it's just all sort of fun fuckery, you know, just something that we've sort of disguised a comic as a magazine, you know, and there's about one-fifth of it is what magazine features, so that people who aren't comfortable with comics suddenly find a way into it and then get into the comics as well with them.
Very cool. What and I know we're running out of time, so I'm going to ask you a couple of quick questions. What's the status of Wanted 2, the film?
Wanted 2? I have absolutely no idea. Actually, I got an email from Tina. Actually, the other day, but it was about something else, you know. But he's out in Russia filming just now. I don't see it happening anytime soon, you know. I mean, I'd be very surprised. I'm still in touch with Universal and all that. We're talking about a couple of other things, but like Wanted 2, I don't know. I've heard absolutely nothing. You know, I actually suggested to someone that if Angelina's not in it, you know, they could maybe get her kids to play the part, you know, a little baby child, and just say she was in the healing bath for longer than planned, and
sure.
We have a little toddler. You know, so.
Well, and I think...
Well,
it is tough to get some of these big stars to come back for a sequel, so I can appreciate that if that is a possible holdup or anything.
Oh, no, to be honest, I mean, the whole thing of Angelina's not coming back is, like, you know, saying that, you know, Darth Vader's not coming back after the Jedi or whatever, you know. It's like, you know, she was, of course, you know, it's like, I couldn't believe it when there was suddenly, you know, sort of talk of her coming back, because I was like, what? But I can also understand, you know, the big draw. You know, she was the huge draw of the movie.
Sure. So,
and the movie did very, very well.
Yes, indeed.
So they thought, well, we better get the most vital ingredient back there. But, I mean, I totally understand what she's saying. How ridiculous would it be if she's killed off, you know, like, any movie where you've ever seen someone killed off, to have them back in the next one would just be outrageous, you know?
Hey, they brought...
It totally diminished the death.
They brought Sean Connery back for those Highlander sequels, so why not? I understand. I mean, you know.
They were awesome, that's true.
Well, and that's the other thing, Mark. I mean,
anything Sean Connery in it's good because he's Scottish, you know.
Well, and I was going to ask, because the superhero film, the current version of the superhero film, because certainly you can go back to, you know, you can really go back to the 40s, to the serials. And I know Superman with Richard Donner in the 70s and the Batman films of the 90s. But I really think this modern age that started with X-Men, Spider-Man, Blade, you know, to where we are today and stuff. Is there a lesson that has been learned as far as taking the superhero genre and translating it to movies? Do you think there is, like, some sort of magic formula that you feel that you understand, as opposed to maybe other people that are trying to make these films?
Of course I do. That's why I'm just really quiet. I don't want everyone to know this.
But
what I do think, what the buzzword of the last 10 years or so is the word that Richard Donner popularized with the Superman movies, which is verisimilitude, which is making it as real as possible. And there's all these people saying, oh, comics shouldn't be realistic, blah, blah, blah. The mainstream, that's what they want right now. You know, like Batman, Dark Knight, so on. It's realistic. Blade was realistic, believe it or not. And its own way, you know, it looked like
sure.
real New York, you
yes.
know, that he was kicking around in. And likewise, you know, I think that was one of the failures probably of the Superman film, is that it didn't really look like a world we knew. You know, it looked like something from, you know, Max Ernst would have designed, as opposed to the actual, you know, a real city. And I think everything in the last 10 years, Spider-Man, Kick-Ass, and all that, Kick-Ass is probably the most real, because all the other characters were comic book characters in that film. It was absolutely supposed to be in the real world, you know. And I think that's the trend, you know. Like, I think that'll change. I think the superhero movies, I think, are just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And this will continue. But I do reckon probably in about 5 years' time or something, where do you go, you know, after Avengers 2? You know what I mean? Where do you go after the Justice League? You know, so by the time Superman's reintroduced and the Flash is introduced and so on, I think they'll probably go away for a little while, because it'll feel like there's a superhero movie getting released every week. But I do think they'll just come back, actually, and there'll be another great 15 years where they all get revisited again, you know, done in a slightly different way.
Well, yeah, I mean...
To me, that's all the game, you know, I love it.
Well, and I was wondering, because as these genres become the norm... I wonder if they are, you know, bomb-proof in terms of, you know, it might hurt the movie for a couple years, and it might hurt the genre, I should say, for a couple years. But I wonder if we're going to wait that long. Even Batman and Robin, you know, the George Clooney Batman movie, and certainly there was a long period in between the next Batman film. I wonder if that space, you think it might stay the same length. I wonder if it's going to be shorter, because there have been enough of these films that they're always going to want some sort of blockbuster, and some studio is going to be willing to take a chance on a different property, but still within the superhero genre in particular.
I think superheroes could disappear for a little while. I mean, people will just get, maybe get the superheroes at some point, you know, once, if there's too many of them out there, and the quality isn't very good. But we're actually really lucky. The quality is amazing. You know, like, if you think about it, it's all A-list directors. I mean, there's a few cheapo directors in there too, but generally speaking, it's A-list directors, A-list talent, and huge budgets for these things.
Absolutely.
So as long as that's happening, and as long as people are going to see it, will happen. But I think superhero movies, in my mind, have kind of replaced action movies. Like, now it's not enough to have John McClane.
Yes.
You know, you want John McClane with adamantium claws. You know?
Sure.
You want John McClane with heat vision, you know, or else it's kind of dull. You know, just so, but I don't know. I mean, everything changes. The thing is, there's no correct way of doing anything. There's only what's appropriate for the moment. Yeah.
Well, and that's why Nemesis in particular strikes me as a John McClane versus a supervillain, obviously, and that the stakes are suddenly...
I mean, that's what I was chatting about that, you know, and it's just a perfect action movie, and you couldn't have done it 10 years ago because, you know, the archetype itself wasn't back in the public consciousness to the same degree, but after two or three Batman films, you know, and lots of other superhero movies, Iron Man, you know, with crazy billionaires and all that kind of thing, to see that kind of flip side of it, to do a supervillain movie, suddenly isn't much of a jump. People could accept it.
Sure. And further, too, I think your guys, and you said this, in fact, in our last conversation, I think, that the British comic writers and stuff and the British comic readers are almost geared to the villain being really kind of the interesting, sexy, if you will, you know, character, as opposed to the straight-laced hero.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, our most famous character, our most famous comic book character, is Dennis the Menace, who's a young anarchist who's always up against the police and teachers and his parents and so on. Whereas America's most famous is, you know, a guilty teenager who fires webs, you know, and a fanboy who's out there trying to do the right thing, you know? And, like, that immediately tells you everything you need to know about the two cultures.
Very cool. And to wrap up, any further news about Tony Scott and what you guys are planning for the Nemesis film?
No, Tony's just got a guy, you know, working away on the story, you know, so
cool.
We'll just see how it looks, and then it can start going out to actors, you know. But they're spending a lot of money, you know, which is really nice. I'm looking forward to the catering. You know, when I show up on set, the food's going to be good. I remember the food on Kick-Ass was terrible. It was like a bus, and all you had was sausages. That was it. Like, I was having sausages 3 times a day, you know. It was freezing, you know, and it was so unglamorous. I'm hoping this is going to be really glamorous. Like, Tony Scott, I imagine, wakes up to an explosion, you know, comes out and has a $10 million breakfast and things like that, you know, after he's a proper Hollywood guy, you know.
No, I think, hey, man, as soon as I heard that he was directing, I'm a big Tony Scott. I love Man on Fire. I think that's one of the best action movies. And I remember the Scott Glenn one, the original one from the 80s. And it was so great to see him dust that off and make an even better film. And I know what he's capable of, you know. So I know you got a good partner in that one. I think that's terrific.
Honestly, Tony is my absolute ideological soulmate when it comes to stuff like that. You know, like, if you think about it, if you look at my books and look at his stuff, it's... You know, we love explosions, we love, you know, fast cars, you know, and, you know, coffee one-liners and everything, you know. I mean, I love Tony Scott, and I actually think he's the ultimate comic book director, and I said that at the time. He's the you know, it's a shock that he's never done a comic book movie. He said he was just never that interested, you know, but he always felt they were too goody-goody, whereas Nemesis is interesting to him, you know. But, like, Brian Hitch and I, we name-dropped Tony Scott almost every day whenever we're doing Ultimates, because you know, Brian's a huge Tony Scott fan. He just loves the way Tony Scott looks at things, and Tony's a brilliant artist. You know, so Brian's got a huge amount of respect for him, and we always said if he ever did an Ultimates movie, Tony Scott would be the guy to do it, you know. So it's getting to work with him, and yeah, I agree, Man on Fire is the Punisher movie I wish they'd made, you know.
Sure.
Instead of three bad Punisher movies, I wish that had been, you know, that's one good Punisher movie.
Agreed.
He hasn't even in.
No, yeah. And bringing up Marvel films, do you see yourself, if invited, would you like to still be part of the Marvel creative team, you know, as these other Marvel properties go to film? You know, do you welcome the opportunity to still have input, or are you content to do your own thing with your movies?
Well, the thing is, I mean, I love the guys, right? I mean, I've been at Marvel for 10 years, and the guys are saints. You know, they are like the nicest people I've ever worked with. You know, the other writers are great guys.
Sure.
The editors, genuine, like, great friends of mine every time I'm in town and everything. And Joe has been like a dream. Literally, in our 10 years, we've never had one dispute, one argument, you know? And, like, you know, so, I mean, I love the idea of hanging out with them and everything, but I just feel I'm doing my own thing. You know, like, I'd rather do Kick-Ass 2 than do a Black Panther movie or something like
sure.
that. You know, I just, I want to make my own characters, produce them, and make Miller World as big as Marvel, you know, like, you know, already we've got a pretty, pretty good slate. You know, like Wanted did well, Kick-Ass has done really well, Nemesis is on the way now. You know, we've got War Heroes over at Sony. You know, Superiors, you know, going to be going out any time now. You know, that probably going to be big, and there's three other things in development you don't know about, you know.
Terrific.
So, like, I mean, my plan really is just to focus on making this as big as it possibly can be, you know, and I'd just like Netherworld to be Marvel for this generation, you know.
Well, that's great, man, and I'm glad it's happening for you, and I appreciate our time today. And I know you're, like I said, I know you're going to be busy, but when the trailer comes up or you're ready for your next round of publicity, you'll come back to Word Balloon, hopefully, and we'll continue the conversation.
Of course, you're the only American who understands the word I'm saying. So of course, I'll be back.
Well, and you call me Walter Cronkite, so you've always got a soft spot, you know, in my heart as well, man. No, it's truly, man, a pleasure to talk to you. Continued success. Keep up the good work.
Cool. Thanks very much, Sean. All the best.
Nice conversation with Mark Miller. We'll keep notice on Miracle Park, and when there is new news to talk about, I'm sure we'll have more coverage right here on Word Balloon. Today's episode was brought to you by FanboyScouts.com. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to live in another world, another universe, another time? If you're a card-carrying member of the Geek Class, you've probably spent countless hours inside fantastic worlds of pure imagination. Books, comics, movies, TV. Whether it's a magical realm of wizards and witches, fighting with the rebellion against an evil empire, or soaring through the skies in brightly colored spandex and a cape, we've all wondered what it would be like to be part of these amazing stories. Now, you can be part of that magic wherever you go. FanboyScouts.com is the home to the original Geek Merit Badge, embroidered patches that represent your ability to meet goals, achieve skills, and complete amazing adventures from all the magical realms we spent all our lives dreaming about. Have you made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs? Have you scaled Mount Doom? Did you graduate from the School for Gifted Youngsters? If so, then you should own the limited edition merit badge that will show the world your achievements. Visit FanboyScouts.com today and join the coolest troop in the multiverse. John Sutra saying thanks again for listening. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. Every Tuesday we have a news episode at iFanboy.com. And of course, you can find us at our home site, WordBalloon.com. Make sure you check out our archive of well over 300 interviews with comic creators from all over the world. Questions or comments about the show? You can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Follow me on Twitter @JohnWordBalloon or under my name at facebook.com. And don't forget to subscribe to Word Balloon through iTunes, or even better, pick up the iTunes app of Word Balloon at the iTunes store. It's just $2.99. That way you won't miss an episode, plus enjoy some bonus content that's coming as well. Until next time, thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2010.